Friday Sport.
Good evening and welcome to Friday Sport, and this evening's programme will be largely dominated by two sports in particular, cricket and cycling. We'll hear from a member of the Manx cricket scene about what the heroics of the England team winning that World Cup will do for the sport over here, and we focus on a huge weekend of cycling on the Isle of Man as the Gran Fondo takes place on Sunday. We discuss the runners and riders and what is bound to be a fantastic festival of cycling. Well, in a week where Apollo 11 is firmly in the spotlight as we're marking 50 years since man first walked on the moon, we begin this evening talking about another Where Were You moment. Although not the moon, the stars in question were donned in sky blue kits, wielded cane-handled, flat-fronted willow wood blades and took on a valiant set of adversaries as the two teams of England and New Zealand put their mutual contempt of the Aussies to one side to do battle on one of the greatest sporting arenas mankind has to offer. Lords was the setting in front of a out crowd, where the culmination of weeks of ODI cricket exploded right before our very eyes in what is being billed already as the greatest game in the history of the sport. It wasn't an electric start from the get-go. It had all the charm cricket possesses as the slow-burning affair burst into life as the Poms whittled away at the target of 242 set by the Kiwis, clad in their famous all-black strip. Needing 15 from the final over, Ben Stokes led the charge against fast bowler Trent Bolt, hands down the best name in the sport. And despite a huge slice of luck and a great deal of mental strength and courage, England fell one short of their target. That meant scores were level and a super over was needed to determine the winner. Now, I was travelling back from Gibraltar, having been there covering the Island Games, so I was unfortunately not in a more pleasing environment watching it with my friends and family. Instead, I was sat at a small table in the Gatwick Wetherspoons, which was absolutely jam-packed full of people glued to the big TV screen there. The beauty of sport bringing strangers together. I was having conversations with people I've never seen before in my life and will never see again. But we were discussing the situation as events unfolded, trying to calculate these odd sums in our heads of how many we needed off each over as time ticked away. I saw the final delivery of the regulation 50 over innings for England, and lo and behold, it was the final call for my flight. What is a man to do in that situation? It's very rare to see England in a World Cup final, and it's unheard of that it goes down to six balls in a super over. I sprinted to gate 55F, and there, sweating, panting and out of breath, I saw a fellow passenger watching the finale on his iPad. So along with a gathering of others, we resumed our nervous dispositions as Stokes and Joss Butler came out for England. There was a queue of people boarding the plane, and we didn't have long. And it was at this point I realised just how much faffing goes on during a super over. I was thinking, just get on with it. I needed to know the result before I got on the plane, otherwise I would have spontaneously combusted. And it got down to the final two balls, and we had to get on the plane. The iPad got turned off, and we put Aggers and the team from Five Live on our phone, and this is what we heard.
It's come to this. Here's the last ball of the World Cup final. Archer bowls it, it's clipped away into the leg side. They're going to come back for the second. The throw is picked up, they throw to the wicketkeeper's end. He's run out, is he? I think he's run out. England think he's run out. England are convinced he's been run out. They're celebrating. It was thrown to the right end, to Butler's end, who had to work hard to take those bails off. England are sure they've got him. Through a tie in the tiebreaker. But it's England's game.
Now, the few of us still keeping tabs on how it was going at this stage let out a huge roar. We were still dawdling because we hadn't wanted to get on the plane before we knew the result, and because we were being so slow and let out a jubilant cheer, we were a bit worried. Why it was the stewardess told us that the captain of the plane wanted to see us. In we walked to the cockpit though, and the pilot and co-pilot are in equally high spirits watching the match themselves, and it really was a special moment. High fives all around and that feeling of being on top of the world. World champions, England are cricket World Cup champions. That's the story of where I was when England won the World Cup. Andy Coulson from the Isle of Man Cricket Association is in the studio with me. Whereabouts were you, Andy?
Nothing as exciting as Gatwick Airport, I'm afraid, Chris. I was just at home watching it through most of the day. When it got too exciting, I kind of hid behind the sofa at times, but it was an amazing game, one of the best games ever.
People don't associate cricket with the high-octane levels of that emotion that we saw on Sunday. Is that rare for you, feeling and being as invested in a match as the one on Sunday?
I mean, well, Sunday's game was exceptional, but it happens regularly in cricket, and it happens regularly in cricket on the island. You'd be surprised how many exciting games you can have that come down to the last over, last ball. There's been many games where I've won a game on the last ball and lost a game on the last ball. It's nice to win those games, but it's horrible to lose them. But
yeah, no, a word for New Zealand, because they were worthy adversaries in a World Cup final, and yeah, it's only boundaries that separates the two, so they can feel very hard done by. But what a final it was.
Well, to have so many things that can cause it to, like, the hitting the bat when it goes for four runs, which normally if it hadn't gone to the boundary, it wouldn't have counted. It would have been completely different. Or Trent Bolt stepping back. Most of the time, these fielders these days, they know exactly where they are. So to have it step on the boundary with his hand in the ball, that's amazing. But when the guy hit that six, the Kiwi hit the six early doors, I thought it was done. But to throw the ball in on that last ball, the pressure that was on that fielder to get that ball, and then the wicketkeeper to take it, but especially to throw that ball in so accurately and then to win the game, it's just amazing.
And to the right end as well. You've got to have your wits about you and be very aware
every
of who's running
way.
Where. So it isn't just a case of throw the ball to the end where the runner is a bit slower. You have to take all this into account whilst retrieving the ball and deciding in a split second. So, I mean, absolutely amazing. And it's a moment that I'll remember for the rest of my life. Just how England seemed to win World Cups. We saw it in 1966 with the football, in 2003 in extra time for the Rugby World Cup, and now completing the set with the cricket in a super over as well. What will that do for the sport in the Isle of Man?
Well, hopefully it will give an even more of a fillip than what we've already got. We've been working hard over many years to get cricket to everybody because we believe it's the best game. And there's a lot of people working, especially in the juniors, and getting into schools. If we're trying to get it into schools now. Every primary school child has had access to cricket, and we're working hard to get it. It's in secondary schools, and hopefully there that they'll get a fillip where everybody wants to play what their heroes did in that final. We're trying to get it out to women and girls, because don't forget the girls and women are world champions as well. We're trying to get it out to everybody and trying to boost it, but we need everybody. It's a lot more work to be done, but we're open to ideas, because there's all sorts of different forms of the game. It just won't be that one day game. There's the 2020 game, there's possibly the 100 ball version, which is coming in this year. There's other shorter versions of the game, which hopefully indoor, beach cricket, street cricket. There's all sorts of cricket that can be played. And the ICC in general want cricket to be, well, they want 50% of people in the world to be have either a player or a fan of the game. I don't see why that can't be the case, especially over here.
I think it's the accessibility that they want to improve as well. Now, I've been brought up and raised by a lot of people in my family who love cricket, so I do watch it quite a bit. But for many people, they won't have felt a buzz like this watching cricket since the 2005 Ashes Test, and it's possibly no coincidence that both these occasions were shown on terrestrial TV. Two-part question, really. How delighted were you that a decision was made that they would show it on free-to-air TV, and how disappointed were you that beforehand it had to be on pay-per-view on Sky if you wanted to catch any of the Cricket World Cup?
I mean, that's what the it was great that it was on free-to-air for the final. It perhaps should have been on free-to-air for the semi-final as well, because then the whole country would have seen us batter the Aussies, which is always a nice thing. But I personally think that all kind of national events like that should be on free-to-air TV. It's not just cricket, but football and all sorts of sports. For when it's especially when it's a world championship thing, that's it should be open to everybody. But
We do see the football, the rugby, and indeed Wimbledon was on Sunday as well. Yeah. A magnificent day of sport it was. The way it was won, does that make it more special?
It makes it more exciting. Been a lot less nerve-wracking if we'd done it the way we did it to the Aussies, because we actually really hammered the Aussies. And they are, that's a good team of Australians, that, but to actually dominate the Aussies, I hope we do it again in the Ashes, because that would be really nice, because the Aussies seem to be able to do it to us when we're in Australia. So it would be really good to do it this time when we're in the UK, to actually batter the Aussies. But they're a good team. They're always, they're like, the Australians are a bit like the Germans in the football. They always play good in a competition. So they have that knack of playing well. So to actually beat them as well as we did in the semi-final was really heartening.
Plenty riding on it, as always, in the Ashes. Plus the fact this is the first Ashes series since Sandpaper Gate as well. So it's always a hostile environment for the crowd as well. A great atmosphere at those matches. And I wonder what it's going to be like. You heard the booing of Steve Smith and Dave Warner in the World Cup. So what's that going to be like in a five-day test match? We'll have to wait and see for that. There was also success for Manx teams last weekend too. Cronkbourne lifted the Blinko Cup.
Yes, Cronkbourne lifted the first trophy of the season. The Blinko's it's a different format, but it's one which a lot of the players enjoy because everybody gets to have a good go at the batting and the bowling. You need to have eight bowlers bowling maximum of two overs, but the overs are eight balls. And they're also in the Blinko format. It's a four innings game, so the team that bats first bat last. So the team that bats second also bat third. So it's an exciting competition, usually. And it's traditionally a B-team competition, but now it's spread out, so it covers most of the players in the leagues. But Cronkbourne did well, and they won decisively by about 50 runs.
How crucial was it that Nathan Knights won the toss and elected to field? Did that have much of an impact on proceedings, do you think?
It's not like the old days when it used to be in the end of August, September, when the early morning dew could affect things. But they're always a good team, Cronkbourne, batting or bowling. So it's important. I mean, they didn't really get into... George got another century. George Burrows got another century. And Sam Barnett accompanied again with another score in the 40s. But they did well. They did well.
And there was also some Tinker Cup action as well, a semi-final between Peel and St John's and Valkyries.
That's correct, yes. Not a good result for Valkyries this time round. The batsmen did well. We scored nearly 250 runs in over 30 overs. Again, the Tinker's a new format for this year, where both sides bat for 10 overs, and then they go back in again and do another 20 overs each. So some people think it's a bit different, but again, it gives everybody a chance. It's not as long a format as the normal weekend league, which is what everybody was... If they play 40 overs, they wanted a bit of a change. So this is the format which everybody agreed upon. You think it's a bit of a strange, it's like a bit of a 10-over thrash. But ultimately, if things had gone differently, it could have been a closer game. I mean, Valka scored 183 in their 20 overs, which isn't a bad total at all.
As always, it comes down to fine margins. Just ask the Kiwis after Sunday. I think they were knocked for six, if you pardon the pun. Such a close game. What matches do we have taking place this weekend then, Andy?
So this weekend, Finch Hill are playing Valkyries on their new pitch at Bala Fletcher, which is by the hospital. Again, we're entering this time of year, once the schools finish, we enter into the holiday season. So it becomes a lot harder for teams to get, because lots of families are going away and everybody decides to go on holiday. So it's a lot harder to get teams out. So it may be that both sides haven't got the strongest teams out. I think the weather that's been the past day or so will slow the outfield at Bala Fletcher. I was there a couple of weeks ago, and if you'd got through the inner ring of fielders, you were almost guaranteed a four, because the ball was just like a rocket. The key will be for Valkyries will be to get George Burrows out and out early before he gets going, because he can score very quickly. There's another couple of players like Josh Sinclair and Sam Barnett who can bat, and of course Tom can bowl and bat. Tom Burrows can bowl and bat, but we have Shahid Rafiq and there's Aaron Mahalingan, both can bat, and Aaron can bowl very well. He's bowling very well. Mohammed Salman can bat very decisively, and he's bowling amazingly well this season. So.
Also on Saturday, Castletown against Crosby.
Yes, Castletown playing Crosby down at King Bill's. Crosby haven't done as well as they did last year. I don't know why. I think Castletown are in a wee bit of a rebuilding situation. But they've got some good players. I mean, Tom Genyuk is in good form. And they've got lots of left-arm bowlers. Yakko scored a century about 2 weeks ago. He scored 107. It's just unfortunate that normally he would sort of be the headline act, if you like. But unfortunately, three other players scored more runs than he did on that evening. So to have four centuries in one weekend is pretty decisive. So Yakko will probably do quite well as well. But it's some good bowlers in Crosby, as well as batsmen. So like Danny Knighton can bat. And also Castletown bowlers, you've got Nathan Williams, the young bowler, who's a very good bowler. He's got a good flight. He can get it to turn. He's a good cricketer.
And then fresh from their Blinko Cup success, Cronkball make the long trip up north. They play Ramsey.
Yeah, they're playing Ramsey. Ramsey are rebuilding. I would like Ramsey to have a good win, but I don't think it'll happen. Cronkbourne, they bat. They've got a huge variety of players. Perhaps not as many as they have had in previous years, so which may account for them not being as high up the league as they were previously. They won it the league last year, but they've got Nathan Knights who can score a huge amount. And he hits it flipping hard if it's coming in your direction. But there's young Harry McAleer. He's back from school and he's playing very well as well.
And then on Sunday, it's Peel and St John's against the Development 11. Andy, just before you go, there is a renewed buzz around cricket following that World Cup win for England in dramatic circumstances. Just finally, before you leave us, if anybody has got a new excitement and enthusiasm for cricket, how do they go about getting involved on the Isle of Man?
You can go to the website, which is www.iomcricket.co.uk. You can go to the Facebook site, which is Isle of Man Cricket. Just search on the Facebook site for that. Or you can email iomcricket@hotmail.com. And then they will hopefully guide you to your local club. There's a club in most areas. Schools will feed you to the clubs. And that's both for men, because we need seniors to play as well. Youngsters, both women and there's also women and girls to play as well. I'm keen for everybody to play.
People of all ages, and especially for the youngsters as well, because the summer holidays are just starting and they've got weeks to be out there on the playing field and improve their cricketing ability. Andy Coulson from the Isle of Man Cricket Association, thank you very much for joining
us. Thanks, Chris.
Friday Sport.
And we move on to cycling now. And Sunday sees a real festival of the sport take place on the island, with a number of events taking place for people of all ages and abilities. The Gran Fondo is the headline act. However, we'll focus on that to begin with, as much more than 600, I think, have entered to take part in the 85-mile race, but there are other events too. Andrew Roach, the Gran Fondo Isle of Man ambassador, a man known to large swathes of the Manx cycling community, he joins me in the studio now. Good evening. I could bore people listening with facts and figures and stats and numbers, but that's not what listeners want. What they want is for you to paint a picture of what I'm sure is going to be an absolutely magnificent event on Sunday.
Well, hi Chris. It will be a magnificent event. It always has been in the past, for the past few years that we've ran it. The course just lends itself to beautiful scenery, massive challenge to all the riders taking place, and the backdrop finishing back in Morag Park this year, I think, is going to be brilliant as well. Plenty of people milling about, as they always do in Morag Park. And it's just something a little bit different. There's going to be food stalls all set out. Just a really nice kind of community feel to it, really.
And we know that cycling is synonymous with the Isle of Man, with some headlines that have been made through World Sport from our own cyclists right here on the Isle of Man. There's going to be some entertainment there at the Morag as well, and it's especially good for people if they're fans of the tour.
Well, that's it, yeah. There could be a bit of a special appearance by somebody with close connections to the Tour de France. So, you know, anybody wanting to see some big stars turning out, definitely come along and have a look and see who shows up.
There is a star-studded cast. Arguably the favourite in the men's race this year is local professional Mark Christian. But there will be plenty of other riders chomping at the bit and desperate to finish ahead of the rest.
Oh yeah, like you say, it's such a challenging route. It's brilliant that Mark supports it. Really, you know, Mark's an absolutely amazing rider in his own right. He's professional rider, and he's supported this event for a good few years now, and it's brilliant to see him still doing so. But for the amateur cyclists and the club cyclists, getting the chance to ride with riders like that on such a challenging course, it just makes it that more special, really.
You think it's the involvement of people like Mark Christian, who a big household name for cycling in the Isle of Man, when he does enter an event such as this, it does inspire more people to get involved. And we do see people from all over the world, from various countries, coming right here to the Isle of Man to compete.
Oh yeah, the Isle of Man has got tradition with cycling for many, many years. You only have to kind of mention the island and you can pop so many riders into your head to come over here and actually ride on our roads. It's kind of one of those kind of iconic places really now, which people like to come to and just experience.
What about the women's race then? Is competition in that going to be equally as fierce as the men's?
Yeah, the women's scene now is growing massively just over the last few years, really, on the island. And we've got some really good local cyclists involved in it. I think it's going to be a bit of a good challenge all the way around, especially the distance being up there at 85 miles, a little bit longer. But they're going to put on a good fight, I'm sure, especially up Ingebrek, the final climb of the day. So that's going to test the legs for sure.
I think they'll be feeling it by then, that's for sure. Race management will likely be important, I take it, considering the length of the course and the varying stages. But there are feed stations, as you mentioned before, marked out for those involved to benefit from too.
Yeah, there's two feed stations. Roads are closed pretty much throughout the whole route. Everything is locked down very, very safely for the riders and the public as well. People who are a little bit concerned about road closures or want to find out about it can go to grandfondoiom.com and find everything out that they need just to kind of work their way around the event. But you'll find everything runs quite slick and we're not kind of putting anybody out with it. So it all runs very, very smoothly.
I'm glad you mentioned the website. You can get plenty of information on the Gran Fondo and the other fondos which are taking place. We will mention them in just a moment. But also, if you do go to the website, you do have a chance. If you're listening to this and you're a bit gutted that you didn't quite make an entry for it this year, you can still make a late entry request.
You can, yeah. There's definitely still time. We're not ones for closing off the entries and turning people away. The more people out there, the better. So definitely get on it tonight. Have a glass of wine if you want to get the courage up and get that entry put in. The more faces that we see out there, the better. We want to see people on bikes. That's the main part of it, really.
And with it being such a challenging course, it's all the more rewarding when you do get to the end.
It is, definitely. It's probably one of the hardest routes you can possibly do on the island. So anybody that gets around it, any faces that we've seen from years past who cross that finish line have got the biggest smile on their face. Yes, it's quite grim, but they cross the line and have such satisfaction that they've completed it. It's just something to tick off, really.
I'll take your word for it that it's a smile and not a grimace. For the serious cyclists taking part, what represents a good time? I mean, what would you expect from your Island Games team, for instance? And let's not forget that some of them are taking part.
Some of them are taking part, yeah. Time-wise, I think is the fastest time about 4 hours 20, something like that, in around. So, yeah, in around that mark, 4 hours 20. That would be a very fast time. The riders who just want to get round, you can add an hour onto that, a couple of hours onto that. It really depends on how you want to ride it. That's the beauty. Some will race it and others just want to ride it and finish it and make it a challenge. So it's ideal in that way.
There you have it. The challenge has been laid down. You mentioned it before, but given the nature of this event, it is worth noting that there are road closures in place that will come into place on Sunday. Are there any key routes which are being shut off to traffic?
There's many, many, really. The route takes us in so many different locations. Your best bet really is, if you're a little bit concerned as to what's going to be closed, is really to go onto the website. So like you say, grandfondoiom.com. There's a few routes through St. John's area, which is usually a little bit busy, so that's one key area you might want to check out. Leaving Ramsey, the same. If you're in that area, check that one out as well. But you'll probably find nothing's closed for too long, so you're not going to have to wait for too long to get through it.
But as I say, it is best to check the website, GranFondoIOM.com. We are almost out of time, Andrew, but it's not just the Gran Fondo. There's also the Medio, Piccolo and Minusculo Fondo events taking place too. And this is about trying to encourage all ages and abilities to get involved in the sport. But if you could please just explain the differences between the events.
Well, the Gran Fondo is the big one. Medio is 40 miles, slightly shorter, still takes in Druidale. Piccolo, kind of family orientated, 20 miles, nice leisurely ride around the northern lanes. Then the newest one is the Minusculo, so that's aimed at getting new people or families and their young kids just out on a bike and riding a nice little half mile circuit through the park. Brilliant opportunity just for people to get them onto the bicycles basically and ride.
It will be a fantastic day of that, I have no doubt whatsoever. Thank you to Andrew Roach, the Gran Fondo Isle of Man ambassador, for joining me in the studio this evening. That's it for Friday Sport. I'll be back tomorrow from 12:30, but now it's time to head towards the news at 6 o'clock.